anti-choice crusade on the move, could it see the end of Roe versus Wade? Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us on iTunes, Wooshka, Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed. Firstly, one we didn't get to talk about last week, the Alabama abortion bill, outlawing women's choice to end a pregnancy in almost all cases, including cases of rape and incest. This comes on the back of other states, Missouri, Georgia, Ohio, Mississippi, Kentucky, also passing anti-choice bills. Ed, first thoughts.
Well, there are two parts to this. One of them, this is baiting the Democrats. What they're hoping for is that the really wild-eyed, feminist, left-wing comes after them and does some crazy things. And then they'll say, see, if you elect the Democrats, this is what you're going to get, even if those people are Republicans or whatever. The second is the test of Roe versus Wade, which made exceptions to all this and didn't give the states the authority really to stop abortions unless there was under some extreme circumstances. So they want to test Roe versus Wade. One of these bills will reach the Supreme Court that's going to be right on that borderline. I think the Alabama bill is so outside the pale that the Supreme Court could knock that down pretty quickly. But one of them, Ohio or something, is going to be right on the borderline. And then we'll see where this new Supreme Court goes. And all bets are off here.
Yeah, as you say, not the Alabama bill, even the pro-choice campaign is, well, for the reasons of challenging Roe versus Wade, they're saying it's too extreme. But could we, in the current environment, see Roe versus Wade go?
Well, again, would it happen before the election? I don't think even Trump wants that to happen. Because that would galvanize too many people on the other side. But he certainly wouldn't mind having it debated in a bunch of states. And then he takes advantage of that groundswell in his behalf. This kind of roadshow of all kinds of crazy ideas and so forth are really to get people's minds off the presidency, off the president, the party, and a potential campaign, and get their eyes on Trump. Because when their eyes are on Trump, anything can happen. So the Democrats have to get through a lot of noise, particularly people like Biden, in order to be heard. So this is creating noise that all the networks have to carry.
Iran, will they or won't they? I heard Trump described as a war hawk who is afraid of war, in spite of the escalation's intentions, military posturing, and Trump himself. The US is rightfully afraid to put this one past the point of no return, and Trump's indecisive threats and backdowns do kind of reflect this. Any thoughts?
Well, we have another enemy out there called North Korea. Same situation. Threats, etc. Now, I don't know that Iran is nuclear ready, but they're certainly nuclear capable. So the president has to look at what happens not just with Iran, but the surrounding countries and North Korea with whatever he does. So bringing the ships in and things makes him look strong. Iran, and I've been there, wants to be a Western nation. So the smart thing to do is not to penalize them, but to get them as Western as possible so there's a point of no return. The way to undermine their government is to be really Western, trade with them and so forth. Their kids get jobs and the like. That's the danger in Iran. Penalties against the government are not. That galvanizes them against whoever is penalizing them.
Trump says he wants to make a deal with Iran, but he quashed the last deal. So what are they even going to the table with?
Well, that is a mystery. And the same thing can be true, again, when I say about North Korea. What is the deal? It can't be the nuclear deal because Obama took that one off the table. So what might the deal be? It has to be do something with trade sanctions and Iran withdrawing its support for Hezbollah and all those other groups that are dangerous to the Middle East and dangerous to Syria and other places. Iran uses those groups to advance its own causes. If they can rein those things in with some kind of deal, good on him.
Forces on a high alert in Iraq, though, and non-emergency government staff pulled out of Baghdad. How disruptive is this going to be for the U.S. in the Mideast?
Well, this goes back to just what we were talking about. This is not about Iraq, it's about Iran. And this destabilization allows some people, the Hezbollahs and so forth, to take action against Iraq, which they know will raise the ire of the United States, and possibly get the United States to do something foolish in Iran. So the whole cycle here, Trump has made this thing himself by backing down on that deal. He's giving these forces who are anti-American a lot of wind, and they've got a lot of wind in the Middle East yet.
War of a different shape, the U.S.-China trade war, and the Trump administration's latest salvo is seeking to limit access to American suppliers for the Chinese telecom manufacturer Huawei. Analysis I've seen saying potential for short-term wins, long-term costs it.
Well, there's another country, us. Well, anyway, this is a big problem. Huawei is a government masquerading as a company. And I think the long and short of it is that. The United States is on to that. Do you allow another government, even if they were friendly to you, to have essential infrastructure, your oil lines, your telephone lines, and the like? So this is not over whether you get 5G or not. It's over who controls essential infrastructure. The United States can play a hard line here because there's the Googles and other people who eventually, and probably in the short term, will be real competitors. But it's always difficult in an open democracy to restrict a supplier. The Chinese do that in reverse. They already do that against Google, against Facebook, etc. This is a bad rat hole to go down. And the best way to compete is to have a better product, not to use sanctions.
Speaking of that rat hole, though, as you alluded, this is following on from threats assessed here in Australia. We were the first, in fact, to raise concerns over Huawei and 5G networks. Australia must be standing right in the middle of this conflict.
Yes, and Canada. Mm. You remember, Canada arrested Huawei's president in Canada. So Canada, Australia, United States, and some parts of Europe are in the same bag, giving over essential infrastructure, not just a competitor, but a potential enemy. And even competitors can become enemies. So you don't know where to go here. If you err on the wrong side, you've really got a situation that'll come back to bite you. If you err on the other side, you have a crippled infrastructure. But to have a well-working infrastructure that the mice have basically taken over the house is not good either. So if Huawei were a straight-up company made in wherever and wasn't doing business with a government, be it the Russian government or whomever, I presume enemy state, yeah, but it's not.
And just still on the trade war, the bailouts for American farmers to help manage the blowback on Middle America, the $12 billion trade mitigation package. A tenth of U.S. farm owners, big business, have received more than half of the $8.5 billion doled out so far through legal loopholes. Looking after the little guy again, Ed.
Well, this is a big deal. But the money doesn't replace the long-term issue for the farmer. Sure, he can put his crops in the ground this year or put the stuff in storage. But what happens next year? Or next month? Where do you turn? Do you don't grow these crops, or do you grow the crops? Using crops as trade warfare isn't very smart, and it deals with Americans' own food security. If I'm not selling to China, where 50% of my crop goes, maybe I don't grow for the other 50% for the United States and the Americas. This is a big dilemma. You cannot solve this simply and easily with some subsidies. And these, who do these subsidies usually go to? To the banks, where the farmers have their loans. They don't go into making better agriculture.
Meanwhile, in Trump world, the president has stormed out of yet another meeting with Democrats, held yet another raving press conference talking about impeachment and cover-ups, said he will not work with Dems on infrastructure, drug prices, and the like until they stop investigating him. Just another week, Ed.
Well, a week, W-E-A-K, he has his back to the wall. No policies, no direction, and these investigations. The Democrats are fighting fire with fire. If he wants to do abortions, we'll do investigations. If he has no policies, what does he claim he's done? You can't go to a negative campaign and say, I didn't do nothing because these guys were against me. That's a sure loser. So this is a short-term lose. He goes to the American public asking for forgiveness, and he gets this blowback. So, Mr. President, you better come up with something better than that. The bills you mentioned were going nowhere anyway. He wasn't getting anywhere with that immigration policy. He wasn't getting anywhere with the rest of those policies. So to say the Democrats investigating and stopping them, send up the policies and make them vote them down. He doesn't have them.
Poor old Trump, though, he's under a lot of pressure with a New York federal judge kicking back his request to halt congressional subpoenas for his banking records. So we're finally going to see those tax returns, and he doesn't like it.
So I think we already know from the New York Times what those tax returns look like. The great businessman is a big loser.
And on the I word, impeachment, Michigan Rep. Justin Amash became the first Republican this week to describe Trump's behavior, in public at least, as worthy of impeachment. Democrats still split on this one. Press on Dem leadership to consider impeachment. And Pelosi is indicating she might be more and more willing. What's your feeling now?
Again, this is a game of table tennis here. The president hits a ball over, a salvo, whatever it is, betrayed or whatever, the Democrats come back with something. Amish is no lightweight. He does have aspirations. Trump's right. He has aspirations for the Senate and the like, for perhaps higher than that. But what he has done, quite interestingly, is taken the words from the Mueller document and say these are impeachable offenses. If they're not, Mr. President, just don't yell. Tell me why they are not. And that silence is deafening.
And I put it to you, although, you know, we've talked about impeachment before, a lot can happen, but without impeachment, we're talking Trump 2020 and a very, very real possibility of him winning. Four more years and a much harder time to argue impeachment or moving against him if the American people, tired, fed up, convinced both sides are equally as bad, give Trump a pass again. What about that?
Well, that's a scenario, and I think it'll take a little while to talk about it. But in that scenario, there's a good chance the Democrats have both houses.
Mm.
And then he's not just a lame duck, he's a dead duck. So what happens then? And I don't think the next Senate, as we see the current Senate, is not that inclined to go along with him. Even if we're close the next time, and I don't think it would be, because more Republicans are in jeopardy than Democrats, if they have both houses, or even close to it, with Romneys and so on, then not only is it a dead duck, you can't last 4 years with no policies, no direction, and crying that you're being beat up.
US Event is produced in the studios of 2SER in Sydney. Help support the work we do by going to 2SER.com/support. And then I'll be back next week to talk the latest in US news and politics. Subscribe on iTunes and Wooshka to stay up to date, and show us some love on Facebook and Twitter. US of Ed.